When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. Time tomorrow, we got Greg Pappas on the board and in studio. Double duty today. Mr. Matt Byrne is off picking up his sister at college. He's a good brother.
Stand-up guy,
yes. Market up strong here this morning. SP Futures up 28, and NASDAQ Futures up 110. We're just going to the moon. Now that we got this new guy coming in, even though the market did nothing go up but go up for the old guy, the new guy is going to be better for the market.
We got a new ag secretary, too.
Yeah. Got a new treasury secretary, a guy who's a hedge fund manager. It's probably not a bad idea.
Well, I don't know.
I'm not so sure either.
The pick that was supposed to be the agricultural secretary was Kelly Loeffler, who's not exactly, you know, as qualified as you'd want, but he didn't go with her for whatever reason and went with a different lady from Texas, which I'm pleased about.
I know there's a whole lot of Trumpers around, but you know the weird part is, I was talking about you this weekend in a group of people.
Hopefully good things.
Sort of.
Nice.
Not. Well, I'm not going to say anything bad about you personally because I happen to like you.
But got to take the compliments where I can get them.
Well, I think the issue is that despite what people think about their political leanings and the idea, you know, the Ukraine and Biden and his kid being a crook and Trump, you know, it's kind of
par for the course.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's exactly what we were talking about, is how the amount of people, when I was your age, a while ago, and younger, I was never under any sort of delusion that the world was straight. But it was, in my mind, it was acceptable. And my uncles told me that. I mean, Chicago had a little bit of grift going, always has, but it was a little bit. The civil service system worked. If your uncle got you a job, you showed up because your uncle got you the job, and you don't want to piss your uncle off.
That was like immigration, too.
Yeah, well, but I'm saying it. But I mean,
you had to know somebody.
But Mayor Daley didn't have $90 bazillion. I mean, he was pretty good at Mayor Richard J. Daley. He was pretty good at making sure his wealth was in other people's pockets, which we've discussed a few times. You know what I'm talking about with that?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Because whenever he needed some favor, somebody else always did the favor.
Yeah, nice.
But I mean, that's the subtle use. But it wasn't like, you know, the guy had one squad car in front of his house, lived in a bungalow in Bridgeport, for God's sake, and had, you know, had one driver. I mean, it wasn't like he was the,
I think the security detail on the mayor's now is like 50 to 150.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's a lot.
And I'm saying it was a... but now, younger people, and I put you in that category, are just convinced it's all crooked. These guys are all, one's worse
than the other. Not only is it all crooked, But it always has been crooked, and we just haven't seen it really.
I know. When you say crooked, nowhere near to this degree. Nowhere near to this degree. You can't compare any of these people in the Senate right now to Paul Simon or Adlai Stevenson or Paul Douglas. Paul Simon came back. He didn't have any money. He taught school till he died at Eastern Illinois or someplace.
Yeah.
None of them. They wasn't like these guys. You didn't have a total grifter like Trump anywhere near office. I mean, Lyndon Johnson probably would. I'm going to say Lyndon Johnson might have been worse than Trump. He was an interesting cat, that guy.
I think it's just more obvious now because we have infinite video and infinite recording and all the sort of stuff that, you know.
Well, you know what the recordings do?
And the recordings are about to get interesting too, because now we have deep fakes. So that now the recordings are actually going to be less credible.
But now you have. I never saw the Big Lie out as much as this.
Everybody says Big Lie. I don't know. There's so many big lies that I can't keep up with.
No, a big lie is very specific. Big Lie is told only by somebody who you would never expect to lie in a position you would never expect.
Well,
you and I
expect everybody to lie.
Well, but you and I can't give a big lie. We're not big enough.
I expect lots of little lies too.
Oh, well, I mean, I hope you don't think you're getting them from me. I don't lie to you.
No, why would I? I mean, I wouldn't expect more lies from somebody who doesn't lie in the first place.
Well, what I'm saying is, a big lie.
So you're in the minority on that one.
The best part about the big lie, according to Mein Kampf, is that even if you do it right, like 10 years later, even after it's totally been debunked, 40% of the people still believe it.
I think you can get 20 or 25% of the people to believe anything.
Well, how many people now do you think?
So that's a 20 delta, so.
How many people now do you think? I mean, this is a serious question. Well, not that they all are.
Flat Earth?
No, how many people do you think in this country believe
25%
that the Chinese are going to pay for the tariffs?
25%, maybe more.
Way more. I'm going to say way more.
Well, they're definitely paying for ag tariffs.
How?
Well, we put a tariff on it, and then they pay it.
No, they don't.
Well,
stuff shows up, our people pay it.
Well, our people pay it, and there's in the form of higher prices, possibly, and their people pay it in the form of cash. So,
No. See, you're going to learn something this morning. Just so you know, if a shipment of Levi's shows up in San Francisco, where the hell Levi's come in, Long Beach, Levi's come in at $50 a pair, so if the tariff is 50%, those people on our end send the government $25, and now it goes to the retailer at $75. Chinese don't pay a nickel.
Well, I'd imagine that those prices paid are reflected.
Some of it, if you do the economic graph, you're going to say that the Chinese maybe sell it a little cheaper to make up for some of the tariff. But we're paying. There's no way the graph is straight up or straight down. There's no way.
What's left. So I'd imagine there would be less ordered, and the price would be higher. And
I'm just saying it's collected on this end. It's not collected in China.
So, yeah, it's subjective. Who pays?
No, it's not.
So
the check comes from the person here.
So is the total income or total outlay from the domestic people the total?
Yes, plus
less
whatever the
or more than they what they would have paid.
Not only that,
if you
look at a retailer,
let me do the math for you here, if you
look at a retailer, it used to be, who the hell knows what it is now. But if you sold a pair of blue jeans at Marshall Fields, they would double it. Okay, retail would double what? So I don't really do this anymore, Greg, but I should be able to do this. To put it on a blackboard, show my age, I could actually tell you based on the demand and the supply how much was paid on our end and how much the Chinese essentially ate on their end. Now, ate is different than paid, okay? Let's just do the math. If the thing comes over $50, we add 25 to it.
Yeah, but that's leaving out the demand part.
Stop for a second. Now, it goes to Marshall Fields. Marshall Fields is still going to double it because they're paying 75. So now it's 150 here, if they use the same formula. Correct?
If.
Well, but I mean, that's their formula.
We've swung so far in the one direction that Trump's contention
is
it could be possible that those tariffs...
Let the record reflect. Trump is running around telling people who's going to pay. I'm telling you, the check is coming from the people on this end. That's absolutely the truth.
Right, the check is coming.
You can't...
Of paid is, yes, they're paying for it. But if there's a total decrease or if there's a total increase, that could also be paid, depending on how...
If you could make the economic argument, which Trump has no idea about, I'm sorry. If you can make the economic argument that the blue jeans, it would have been 60 or 65 if the Chinese didn't know we were putting the $25 tariff on it. They were lowering their price to make up for the tariff to keep it competitive in this country.
That's assuming demand stays constant.
I'm saying.
There's a big assumption in there.
No, there isn't. Saying
large assumption.
If we put a tariff on Mercedes cars, all right, and Mercedes wants to be competitive with Cadillac, two things are going to happen. Mercedes will drop the price of their cars some to remain competitive, and Cadillac will now raise theirs. Either way, the consumer gets screwed. Either way. But I spent a whole semester on this in grad school.
It's mostly defined by what is paid. No. Is there more coming in, less coming in? What is
the
cash transfer is going to come from the U.S.
Yes,
but the actual number, the aggregate, the total, goes up or down. That's I'm not.
But if you're Cadillac, and all of a sudden the price of your competitor Mercedes, even if Mercedes takes a chip by saying, look, the tariff's $3,000. We'll lower our price by $1,000, so it's not so bad. Okay. Now the $3,000 is coming from the people on this end. There's no question about that. And now Cadillac goes, look at this. The price of Mercedes is up $3,000. We can either lower ours and kick their ass. We can leave it the way it is, or we can say, wow, we could probably nudge ours up $500 or $1,000, and nobody knows the difference. We're still competitive.
They could.
Well, but that's the beauty of it. Our people get to raise theirs, right? Now, if you're a consumer, what do you care? You're just paying more. How has it helped you?
Ideally, what happens is we're on a more competitive playing field, meaning aggregate total sales of both manufacturers, or Trump would say he wants American manufacturers to sell more and collect more cash. If that means that lowering the demand for the foreign cars.
You're not lowering the demand at all. You're lowering the quantity demanded.
The quantity demanded of the foreign could lead to a quantity demand in the in the domestic. That would probably be his definition.
Yet little Greg is now paying more no matter what. So tell me how it helped you.
Because the supply from the domestic suppliers would be going up versus the supply of the
Right, so how does that help you buy a car?
Thing.
You just paid more.
You paid more, but the supply chain is closer to home and less impacted by foreign action.
If you have a job at Cadillac, it might help you out some, maybe. Or it might just be the guy who charges
Cadillac. Well, I think their argument for the chips, at least, and spending all the money to bring the chip makers here
That's different. The argument there is having the chips in the first place. You can't build a missile without chips. But there's a difference between tariffs just to screw people on money.
It goes down to the definition of where the cash is going to. So like when we export the grains,
the last thing we're going to do is
put a net inflow. We've got a
right, well, no. no they we don't actually
Trump ex- sees export all tariff. The cash going out and he gets angry for whatever reason.
Export tariffs are prohibited by the Constitution. You can't have export tariffs.
I'm saying the reason Trump's angry, or I don't know the reason, but the...
Nobody knows what is in his mind or what's in there.
Well, you say he doesn't know anything about economics, but...
I said no, nobody knows what's in his mind.
Every
place I go, somebody tells me what's
about economics.
What I said was, I don't think he could go through a line of who pays what on the tariffs. And maybe he can, but what he's saying to people is that they're going to pay for them, and that's
so
wrong.
I think the reason that the tariffs are in play in the first place is because there's such a big trade deficit that he's angry that all the cash is leaving rather than staying at home being spent on Americans for whatever. So I think the idea of behind the tariffs is to get more cash to stay home, more domestic suppliers to get business. And I don't know if it's going to lower the trade deficit, but I'd imagine the American suppliers would get more business from home.
That's the drivel they're telling people. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's swung so far in the free trade direction. It is possible to where keeping some of the...
Explain to me the difference between trade deficit and the current account deficit.
The current account deficit?
Yeah.
Between all supplies and all goods?
The trade deficit is a narrow...
The cash going out?
If you have floating exchange rates, which we have, the beauty of floating exchange rates means at the end of the day, everything is equal.
Everything's right? Not equal.
Everything is equal, or the price, the exchange between us and Britain, for instance. If all of a sudden everybody's buying everything from Britain, the trade deficit is strictly one way, the dollar versus pound would adjust. But there's also other stuff. People invest. In other words, if we are trade deficit, say with Mexico, all right. Suppose it's way more stuff's coming from Mexico than's going down there. But if the people
they're our largest trading partner now.
But if the people here own a lot of the places in Mexico, which they do, and the dividends and all that stuff, the profits come up here in cash. That's in terms of money flowing back and forth. That equalizes. Nobody ever talks about that.
I think it's like. Whatever they did before, it's like 15% or 16%.
What I'm saying is, the cash can come back this way. Nobody talks about that. Oh man, we're importing more tequila than we're sending down to Mexico. Okay, but the people who own the tequila companies are people here, and the cash is coming this way from the ownership of the place.
Yeah,
The cash is
justified to defense spending.
Right, but I'm saying the cash is
not
even.
A great argument.
The cash is even. The trade deficit is just a part of it. I'm more concerned with what exactly we're getting from. I'm exceptionally concerned not with the deficit itself in terms of the money. I'm concerned that virtually all antibiotics are made overseas. Mostly all generic drugs are. Well, I got a problem with that. If we're going to start worrying about missiles and kicking up the defense spending here, which I think probably we should, and I find out that half the parts are coming from China. Well, now I got a problem. It's nothing to do with the money. I mean, you can't put a tariff on a part you really need, can you?
I think that's what they're threatening.
Well, but how does that help anybody?
I think the threat is a general threat saying if you don't either stop tariffing ours, we're going to stop.
Who's tariffing us?
Well, for example, in a China situation, if they try to import. Or if they try to push their own products, whether it be grains or electronics or whatever, I think cars too. You can't buy a car there without an upcharge from the government.
Okay, so they have tariffs too. I have no idea what's going on in China.
That's what at least I've seen so far is if you've got a tariff on our stuff there, expect. A tariff of equal or greater value on your stuff here.
Okay.
So that
I've never been to China. I never want to go. I'm just telling you what tariffs do. They're a tax on people here.
Yeah, they're a tax.
Well, I'm just saying, walk around your bar tonight.
The aggregate. I don't know what you know. What that means in aggregate. You know, if I'd say if total revenue went up here, that would be a win for the tariff. Total revenue went down.
Total revenue went up to who?
Well, I'm saying how do you evaluate if the plan worked or not?
I don't think you can. I don't think tariffs are a good idea.
If your domestic's revenue go up, That's the first part of it. And then you want the total revenue for the net change to be higher in your market than theirs.
The only way I would think a tariff is a good idea, as Carl says, is if you have child labor laws and the other guy doesn't.
I mean that too.
I would be up for equalizing that. Plus, the do-gooders here are so dumb in some ways, not individually, but collectively. If we just don't dirty the air here, we're okay. We just don't pour crap into the Rio Grande River from our side of the river, we're okay. But
yeah, I don't know.
But if we go, that's
that select few you were talking about.
No, it isn't. Why do you think what's the rare earth stuff? We mine a lot of it here, but we don't process it here because it's dirty. We ship it to China to process it. We ship laws against that. No, there isn't. We need it processed.
We can't acid bath stuff here like they can in China.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So
we said
it has to be done there. The only way you can do it here is if.
Oh, okay. So we're offshoring our pollution.
Yep.
And we're offshoring our child labor. Now, if we were going to have some kind of tariff system that somehow, I don't know how you'd even do it, that somehow equalized that, you know, I might go for that. How do you do that?
Either way, it would probably be closer to what? The price would go up.
But it's still every single tariff screws a consumer on this end.
Well, screwing the consumer, you know, child labor, the price goes up either way.
My point is that we started this by saying, what's the big lie?
There's so many big lies, we can't count them.
We're zeroing in on one, at least I'm trying to. As you wander off into, there's a million of them. Fact is, if you interviewed 90% of the people here, they would say that the Chinese pay the tariffs. And it's flat out wrong. They don't. We do.
Yeah, I'm not sure people really go into the minutiae of economic, quote, theory. But it's like talking about different goalposts where they're talking about having something, paid, meaning... who's winning? They're thinking about who's winning versus you're thinking about cash in versus cash out.
No, I'm talking about what somebody tells people and what they believe and what's the truth.
What they're told and what they hear versus what they
without a doubt
think is all jumbled because these terms are very they mean different things to different people.
Economic terms are pretty specific.
Yeah, but nobody knows those economic terms.
Well, that's the problem.
That's what it is. So when they say paid, what's the definition of paid? Who's winning? I think in general, who's winning or who's,
I think,
quote,
you, when you start talking
paying,
about it, you have to realize who's the chump. The chump is you. You're the one who's paying.
You know. Market economy, usually the businesses figure it out first. So.
Well, okay, but I'm saying we have had tariffs, by the way, on foreign cars here over the years.
Smoot-Hawley?
Well, and we had the, and people sent up, that's why people assemble BMWs and stuff here. Get around the tariffs.
Yeah, because they're assembled.
They're assembled here. But I mean, and that's probably not it's probably not a bad idea to have people here putting them together. I didn't say it was a bad idea. I'm just saying, let's be specific who's paying, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, S&P futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 99. We're bullish today. We've got, we'll tell you what everybody's doing as soon as we get back. Stocks with Jax.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Sharks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Greg Pappas on the board. A bullish Monday here. S&P futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 98, Dow futures up 275. Believe it or not, we were up more than this. We were up quite a bit more. Dow was up over 400 at one point. S&P, not so much more. We're kind of still at the high here. Maybe up, what did they up, Greg, last night? 32, 33, something like that?
Yep.
NASDAQ was up maybe a little more than this, but the you know, Dow is a big. In the Dow, though, virtually everything is green. American Express, can you explain? I mean, one of the biggest performers to the upside since the election has been American Express. I'm not so sure. I don't know why it wouldn't. I'm not so sure why that would be up that much. I mean, do you think there's going to be that much more foreign travel? I mean, maybe. I don't know. Whatever it is. Anyway, Caterpillar up 251. They're all up. Goldman Sachs up 424. The banks seem to think they're going to do a lot better. New Treasury Secretary, what's the guy's name?
Bessent.
Everybody seems to predict. But then again, you know, none of these people, normally the FBI vets people before they're nominated.
I don't think they knew who was going to be nominated, really.
Oh. I said there normally.
There's like five of them.
Normally, people are vetted before they're nominated. Trump doesn't care about anything like that. It doesn't appear. Now, that doesn't mean they won't pass. I don't see anybody there looks like a crook to me. Not the Attorney General dropped out. But, I mean, normally it's not done this way. It doesn't appear. That's what I hear. I mean, John will know more about that. Over in Europe, we've got the... we don't have any rules anymore. You're correct about that. DAX up 33. That's only 0.1%. FTSE up 12.1%. CAC Rand's down 5.1%. So, European markets are, I'll say, stagnant. I mean, really stagnant here. It's kind of weird. Nikkei are up 496. That's 1.3%. Hang Seng down 78.4%. Shanghai down 3, call that flat. So we can't seem to get a consensus here, although it looks more bullish than bearish. On Friday, Dow was up 426, S&P up 20, NASDAQ only up 31. NASDAQ was the laggard, but the market was bullish. Bonds down 5 basis points, 4.36. The Bund 2.24 unchanged. Japan unchanged at 1.07. Oil down 14 cents, 71.10, but it was up Friday pretty heavy after the show. We're doing the show, it was under 70, so we're up during the day. Brent down 8 cents, 75.09. NASDAQ, natural gas up 16 cents, 3.28. I guess the natural gas is up, what, 40% in the last, it was under $2.
That's a wild one.
Yeah.
Anybody who's trading those futures, you know, my hat's off.
We have gold, which I think is down. Gold's down 28 bucks, 26.83, so the... I don't know why the U.S. Treasury Secretary news. I don't know why that would make a shot on gold here, but it did. Silver down 52 cents, 30.81. Copper up 2 cents, 4.10. Foreign exchange, pound, wow, under 105, 104.8. I'm sorry, the euro is 104.8, the British pound, 125. So dollar's really stronger against the euro, a little bit stronger against the pound. So there's got to be, the euro is actually weakening versus the pound as well, which is... I don't know what the story is there. Maybe we'll get Carlo Pine on that tomorrow. Crypto, Bitcoin up 1,498,161. We'll see if it makes 100,000. Sure, pushing that way. What do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports, dot bears.
Morning, everyone. It is 6:36 here in Chicago. We've got 53 degrees right now, mostly cloudy. Bit of rain. Phoenix, 56 now. So high of 77. We got high clouds there, but sun. High of 77 today. Traffic inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 16 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 30 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 22 minutes. And the Ryan from 95th is 16 minutes. NFL. Vikings beat the Bears at Soldier Field. That was 38-27. Good game for Caleb Williams. Best game yet, I believe. 32 for 47. He had 340 yards and two touchdowns. Lions beat up on the Colts. That was ugly. And Ravens Chargers tonight at 7:15. That's all I got, Chief.
Back are the Chargers any good this year? They are, aren't they?
Yep. Yes, they are. And I think the spread is 2.5 tonight, so it should be a pretty good game.
At this point of the year, who do you like? Well, it looks like Philly and Detroit, huh?
Yeah. I believe more in Detroit than I do Philly.
Any chance to come back of the 49ers with all these people hurt?
The 49ers have their work cut out for them the next couple games, but after that, you know, you'd expect to see them in the playoffs, and who knows.
We have Mr. Flanagan.
Good morning, all.
How are you?
Good. How about you, Tom?
I'm hanging in there. You know, arguing economics with Greg is always interesting. It's a, you know, it's a cool thing. That's why you have to find out what other people are thinking.
John. He has to leave his insular economic world.
Yeah. the two Harbaughs are playing tonight, Kevin says, playing against each other. The Harbaugh got himself a good spot there in San Diego, didn't he? He left Michigan in the total disarray. The what do you think of college ball? One of the announcers, sounded like he was listening to Stocks and Jacks, Jen. He said the current strategy in college football is with everybody leaving through the portal that isn't playing, the teams are becoming less and less, or they're becoming, they have less depth and more games. He goes, I'm not so sure that's the direction you want to go. Is that what we talked about last week, Jen?
Yep, he's following your cues, Tom.
Look at all the formerly stacked teams that are limping into the end of the season. Alabama, they used to have, 85, 90 guys that they had stacked up, and now all those guys are playing somewhere else if they're not starting, right?
Yeah.
So it's good for competition.
Yeah. Hey, Greg, do me a favor. Dig up.
Michigan-Ohio State is this week coming up,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, if they lose to Michigan. Michigan's got, what, 3-4 losses?
That's the perfect game for them to really mess up Ohio State.
Yeah, but, you know,
that Indiana game was kind of boring, gotta say.
Well, did you listen to any of it?
I watched Indiana Ohio State for 30 minutes.
Did you listen to the guys that were doing the show, or you just watch it like in a bar?
Anyway, it was. The sound wasn't on.
Because the one guy was saying that, and I didn't know this because I'm not the betting guy, but Ohio State's the odds-on favorite to win the national championship. They're the one team that still has a stacked roster from top to bottom. They got depth everywhere, which nobody else has been able to maintain.
I think Ohio State is 7-1 in the conference, and Penn State is 7-1.
Well, what I'm saying is that in this guy's opinion, they have the deepest roster. If they have to play three games to get to the finals, they'll be able to do it. Not many people can. I don't know if the Irish can. I mean, they've lost
Oregon
some people.
Can.
That was his point. Yeah. Is that Ohio State's way deeper than Oregon. The further they go in a season, the better they are relatively. What's his point? I mean, is it somehow they've been able to, you know.
Did you see, what's it called, Texas A&M versus Auburn?
Yeah, they got
Texas A&M. They screwed up their season.
You know, they can still get in.
Or Kansas, Colorado. That was a shootout, too, for
Kansas.
Well,
Texas A&M beats Texas if they go to they're going to go to.
I mean,
the,
that's a terrible loss for A&M.
I know.
They were shoo-in for.
If they beat Texas in the conference championship, they go automatically.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't see them beating Texas, though. Do you?
I haven't watched Texas. I should put that on the schedule.
They're pretty good. I rank them right up there with maybe the other Oregon, Ohio State.
Yeah, that's
Ohio State.
A good
I do think they're. I don't think Oregon. They lose to Oregon again. That's just. Kevin says Michigan 6-5. Ugh. Well, yeah, how many people did lose?
But Auburn was unranked against A&M, and they carried the overtimes, and they carried the they stormed the field.
Well, I mean, but the Alabama, Oklahoma kicked their ass. Oklahoma wasn't ranked. They
didn't pull them down a whole bunch?
whatever. I'm saying Oklahoma, it wasn't even close. They were well, they won by like 3 or 4 touchdowns, didn't they?
They won by 21.
Yeah. I mean, and Oklahoma wasn't ranked.
Nope. They were 2-5.
Yeah, I mean, it's saying these teams that were in Georgia. I don't think any of the teams, I mean, look at the Irish. Okay, and the Irish are ranked 5 now. They have some really good players. Their defense is good. Their special teams are good. Offense isn't so bad.
Yeah, the only team who really took care of business in the SEC was Georgia. That was but UMass isn't good.
No.
I mean, Florida beat Ole Miss. That was wild.
I'm saying is I don't think any of these teams are as good as they were 5 years ago because they can't stack them as much.
You can't use your college name to draft or to pull all those people who necessarily would have come just because of the name.
Well, everybody now there's if you're money. Not, if you're not starting, they're leaving.
Yeah.
I just wonder.
Or you're getting paid somewhere else more.
Well, yeah, you get paid more.
Yeah.
Well, you got to be. Well, I don't know. That's a good question. What do you think, Johnny? You getting paid more as a reserve at Alabama or a starter at like Ole Miss?
Or I don't know. Something we could bet on.
Well, you know, We're betting on the betting.
Well,
I texted out to my Notre Dame guys who, I don't know, but they're into the sports like there's no tomorrow. I think you need to put on every sort of like you do in pro. And I was talking to John yesterday. Were you a watcher of the Boardwalk Empire, Greg?
No.
Well, I did watch a little bit of it, but evidently, it was a first in one regard. It was the first TV set. Well, what do you call it, TV? That's like miniseries that are on HBO or something, but that actually had its own set they made for it. They constructed a whole thing that looked like the boardwalk back in those days. You know, that's stuff you only really do for movies. It's the first time anybody ever did it for TV. Anyway, the mayor, Nucky, who ended up being ahead of the... He was head of the gang? Ended up head of the gang, Jen, or something? I just saw the first few. Well, they knock off this truck with booze on it. So they get their take. So the next day or the next week, these guys knock off another truck. And they come to Nucky with the envelope. He goes, I didn't have anything to do with that one, and that's not mine. And the guy says to him, Nucky, you can't be half a gangster. You're either in or you're out. And the way this college is going, at some point, I think Kevin agrees with me, if he ever agrees with me on anything, is at some point, these dudes, if they're going to go like pro, you're going to end up with every week, here's how much the coach makes, here much all these other guys make, here's how much our team's getting paid versus the other team is getting paid. And if your team's getting paid $20 million a year and the other guys are getting paid $500,000 a year and you'll lose, you're going to go for the coach's head, right? Chop it off! Right?
And at the big schools, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, if you're paying all this stuff, I mean, look, I mean...
Do you know over the past 20 years, Ohio State's actually outraised Alabama?
Wouldn't be a bit surprised.
That's interesting.
Did you ever go to Ohio State game?
Yeah.
It's unreal going to Ohio State game. This is the state of Ohio against the world.
Yeah.
Even a Notre Dame game's not like that. Not even close. What's the song? This fight song is the state song, isn't it, Jan? Ohio?
Yeah, I can't hum it. But.
Yeah, but Greg,
let's do some predictions here. I'd expect Oklahoma State to go up. I'd expect Florida to come back. Texas already has surpassed Alabama. And, yeah, I mean, this is, in terms of money-wise, the biggest donors, it kind of follows. It's strange because Oregon, by far and away, has the most money, and they've ascended.
Texas. I'm going to say
Texas and A&M are close. But I think Oregon, just because, you know.
The Nike guy?
Phil Knight, yeah. And it might be closer over the past couple years, but total raised, and the donors, I mean, Oregon is top dog. So it's interesting how they've ascended pretty quickly.
Well, I don't think, but at some point, Clemson's got enough dough, LSU's got enough dough, they all, and Florida State, they've had horrendous years.
Right.
I mean, what is Clemson? Are they even 500?
I don't. Are they on? Are they on the high?
No,
they're not higher than Alabama and.
They were getting there.
And Ohio State.
No, but they were growing every year. LSU, when they recommitted to Kelly and all that. LSU's always had money.
Yeah, LSU definitely has.
Florida
has
State had though
huge supporters and a wide base. The ones that
Oklahoma's always had though.
Right. I would expect Okie State to actually be better, just because I think that money would make more of a difference now.
Well, what I'm saying is at some point when are we going to decide we're just pro teams? Ever?
I don't know, but I still think we should buy a university.
Buy a university?
Yeah.
How the hell do you do that?
I don't know, but we could do it a lot better, including managing the football team.
Jen, what? Speaking of which, you're supposed to be like the professor in Gilligan's Island. What exactly these land grant universities? What is their deal with states? I mean, they have such an advantage. When I say land grant, they gave Illinois, they gave Iowa, they gave all those places. They gave them just the property, and then now they support it. What is exactly the relationship between a land grant university in the state? You have any idea?
Well, the mission, it's the idea of founding a university in, at the states as they became, eligible for statehood, and then participated in the land grant act, which I think is 1862 or something. It's about the time of the Homestead Act, I think. And they're all kind of interconnected. A settler could get free real estate if you lived on land for a certain period of time, cultivated it, and established a residence there. You'd get title to it. Then, of course, you had to pay the taxes, but you didn't have to pay anything for it. And the land grant university was the same thing for public educational institutions. And the idea was that they would, especially because these states were, agriculturally important to the whole country, the idea was that they would concentrate on things like mining, agriculture, things that would take advantage of the natural resources in these places. So they had a mission to educate the people of that state and to, raise it up economically and socially. And the tuition, was set by the states. They could do all that themselves and administer the budgets and everything else, but they didn't have to spend a lot of money acquiring property, raising money, or having philanthropic institutions like Leland Stanford or John D. Rockefeller with Stanford and the U of C to foot the bill for this stuff. So I think even Cornell University, which we think of as Ivy League pretty much, was, I believe, a land grant institution. I may be wrong about that.
No, there's every place in Illinois, Eastern, Southern, Western, they're all part of that same thing.
Yeah, they're offshoots of the university system, and the campuses were founded Western Illinois, Eastern Illinois, Southern Illinois, Northern Illinois. Sangamon State became University of Illinois at Springfield, and UIC. These were are all part of the same institution. They're just various campuses. It's kind of like the model of the California system. But yeah, they are, as far as I know, the land for those institutions was given to the state, by the state, to the institution for the purposes of the university and all of these campuses.
That's why you have, like, Illinois probably does too, but Illinois or Wisconsin, Iowa have big veterinary schools and those kinds of things for the...
Yes.
Yeah. So, you have people, people can take care of people's cows and stuff, right? I mean, it's a...
Right. And it was a recognition of what the state really needed. I mean, Chicago was really not on the radar. It wasn't dictating the state's destiny, until fairly recently. Most people would be appalled at what that's turned into. But Illinois is an agricultural state. All of these institutions, were designed to fulfill the mission of the states, which was, the agricultural energy and money that was earned and so on. This was big business and it was important, and you wanted the states to be competitive with each other and to all have kind of a level playing field when it came to training people for these, professions or for these crafts or you name it. So, and it wasn't just agriculture, but it was things like crafts, so the fine arts, sculpture, music and so on. These were all considered important for a state's growth to make them attractive to to appeal to people even across the border. The states became competitive, of course, attracting each other's residents. You know, and of course, Illinois has suffered in the past decade or so with losing its own residents to other state institutions, but we're not attracting at the same rate. But the concept was a good one, I think.
Does the A&M always stand for the same thing?
Agricultural and mining? I think. Could be wrong.
I don't think it does. I mean, I think Texas is agriculture and mechanical.
Mechanical, yes. Right, mechanical.
But some are agriculture and mining, right?
Yeah. And states where they're, mining is part of a lot of states.
Yeah.
Probably every state. But things like South Dakota had a school of mines, just a school of mines. It did nothing but train people in mining technology and, surveying and so on. This was, these grew into larger institutions with more academic offerings and professional offerings over the years. But they started out often as just directed towards a particular skill set for people in mining or agriculture.
Did you know that Texas A&M
The normal teachers' colleges, too, just trained teachers, pretty much. So you have these
well, didn't Circle, University of Illinois at Chicago, which used to be called Circle, wasn't that originally the Illinois Teachers College at Navy Pier?
It was a branch of University of Illinois. It was not the Teachers College, but the Chicago Normal School was at 68th and Stewart on the south side. And this is where I first lived in Chicago when I was just a couple months old. It's called Normal Park, that neighborhood. It's kind of at the southeast corner of the Englewood neighborhood. It's called Normal Park on the Rock Island stop and everything else. And that was the Chicago Normal School. And of course, Normal, Illinois, where Illinois State is, was another branch of that. The Northern Indiana Normal School became Valparaiso. And all of these states, glomped on to the normal method of establishing criteria for, instructional methods, testing, to train people according to some kind of agreement. This is what students should know. This is what teachers have to know to produce these kinds of students. So the normal phenomenon was different. It kind of, it's been fused in some ways with the community college system now in Chicago, but it was separate from UIC, which was the Navy Pier campus of the University of Illinois in Chicago, which is pretty primitive. Did you ever go down around there when it was the college campus?
Talk about lowering the broadcast. When I came back to Pullman as a consultant, right, it was kind of bizarre, but they had all these consulting guys that all lived in Lake Point Tower, because downtown Chicago was horrible back then. This is 78, 79, before I was a trader. And all these guys, they lived in Lake Point Tower when they came from Philadelphia, because you had your own food store, you had your own park. Lake Point Tower is essentially designed as a city, right? Well, these dudes would have a poker game every week. And I learned how to play poker at a very young age. My mother was a very good poker player, and my family played poker every Sunday for 4 hours after eating dinner. Anyway, so they always needed an extra player, and I went down there and played with these guys. And I used to park downstairs, where literally it was a penny for 12 minutes. The entire pier was shut down. This is after even the school left.
Yeah.
Navy Pier was absolutely not a light on it at night, maybe at the end so a boat didn't run into it. There was nothing there. No boats, no warehouses, no nothing. And Lake Point Tower was not able to become condominiums for forever. Let's talk about a weird story. They weren't able to become condominiums because they were built on the railroad, the air rights over the Illinois Harbor Belt Railroad, which used to service Navy Pier. And at that time, you know more about this than me, if you didn't own the property, you couldn't have the place condominium. So they got a new owner in there, and they were going to make a condominium, and the city still wouldn't budge. Finally, somebody did, and they went all condo. And was it like 5 years ago they bought all the condos back from somebody else?
Yeah, decondominiumized it. Yeah.
I wonder if that was a good buy or not. I have no idea. But the people who took over that actually were able to do it was that, sorry, Greg, that kind of crooked Greek group, the Veletuses or Galetuses, what was their name?
Oh, American Invesco.
Yeah, they were a piece of work, that place. But anyway, Lake Point Tower has a story basically all about Chicago. And I go play one of the dudes. Get a load of this, Jen. The man probably gives a crap about this, but one of the guys, because he wasn't married, and all these guys want to smoke cigars, right? Yeah, we played in his apartment. He's this gorgeous, like three-bedroom apartment for one guy. And he was one of these dudes, short, stocky guy with the gold chain, right? A horrible poker player. He had, like, the original Sony. Greg, when you wanted to get a VCR and stuff, you had to get it with the whole machine. So he had this whole Sony big, huge Monsters Entertainment Center. On each side, he had, for stereo, for records and stereo, he had those big towers with, like, three tapes in it that he could mix his own music and stuff.
Nice.
And he was a world-class collector of Leica cameras. I guess Leica cameras, are they?
Yeah, those are the premium standard.
Greg, if you went into the can, there was a shelf with five antique Leica cameras in the can.
Wow.
I mean, the guy must have had 150 of them. I mean, I don't know how much money the dude had, but he was a terrible poker player. I never lost. I mean, these guys were, they'd be arguing, and I'd just sit there and play. Anyway, it wasn't like a lot of dough, but you know, those days, $50 a week was a lot of dough. And I always won, you know, I never won more than about 100, but 50 to 100 was pretty cool. And I'd drive down there, and I'd park my junkie car down there, and put my three pennies in until it was, you had to put money until like 9 o'clock, Jen, or something. So Greg, you know, in your lifetime, you're throwing pennies in there, and every time you turn the thing, it would move up 12 minutes, right, Jen? You got 12 minutes for a penny?
Yeah.
So if you want an hour, you had to put five pennies in and crank it five times. And an hour got you to where, you know, it was late enough. But I'd walk out, and I was the only person in the whole area. Can you imagine that, Navy Pier now? Was it the only car and the only person? This is, you know, not that long ago.
No.
And,
well, I remember but the precursor of Taste of Chicago, Chicago Fest, this is in the Blandick era and the Jane Byrne era. But I think I went to the first Chicago Fest, which was held at Navy Pier. This would have been 1976, maybe 70s. No, 77 or 78, I think. And I remember that, you know, they had, like, food and music acts and you know, very primitive by Taste of Chicago standards. And there was nothing on the entire length of the pier except these shabby old warehouses.
Yeah, that's what they were. They were warehouses.
Completely falling down. And you'd walk down to the rotunda, which is now this, you know, space that's used for, you know, police swearing. I mean, it's a very grand space, like a half circle, all lit up with a dome and everything. And that was where they had, you know, like a theater for Chicago Fest. But you had to trek the whole length of the pier to get to this thing.
Which is damn near half a mile. So it's
weird. Yeah, and you look like you're walking through, you know, the most decrepit urban, you know, center city kind of, you know, wasteland you could imagine. And everybody's just, you know, in their nice summer clothes, walking through this construction era that had, like, not been touched in 50 years. And then you get to this thing at the end, it's all lit up and glittery, and, you know, Karen Mason is singing and all this stuff. I thought, this needs some work. This whole thing has not...
Well, yeah, now it's like a crown jewel. Hey, you know, we'd be remiss 37 years ago today, Jan, what happened in Chicago?
37 years ago today.
Harold Washington croaked.
Yeah, that's right. It was Thanksgiving week, right?
Chicago's first African-American mayor, and I'm going to say pretty much everybody loved the guy. He had a great personality. He was talented. He knew the city. I think he did a great job. I mean, I always really liked the guy, didn't you?
Oh, boy, I would do anything to have him out.
Oh, without a doubt. That's a
major... It's sad. I mean, he'd just been reelected the previous
eight months into his second term.
So.
The guy, we're talking about somebody who didn't take care of himself.
Yeah, not sad.
He was a sprinter, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think at one time. I don't know.
I think he was a big track star. And people don't... One of the aldermen here, a guy named Ralph Metcalf, was he... He went to Berlin with...
He was with Jesse Owen, yeah.
Wasn't he part of the relay, or did he came in second or something?
Yeah, and then later he was congressman.
Yeah, and Harold Washington was a sprinter as well, and then he got real, real heavy. I mean, real heavy. And what did Ralph Metcalf say to him one day? He goes, "Hey, can you still run?" He goes, "I couldn't run around a quarter," he said to him. But the dude would stop. They would have the limousine stop for like four quarter pounders along the way from City Hall to home or something. It was unbelievable. But, I mean, again, everybody liked the guy. And, boy, I'd take him today in a second. SP Fever's up 29. NASDAQ Fever's up 105. Be right back.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board, John Flanagan with us. But at the Buffalo Springfield, that's going to resonate for how many centuries, John? Or something happening here where it isn't exactly clear? I mean, whoever wrote that line wrote a good one, wouldn't you say?
Especially now when everybody thinks everything is crystal clear.
You know? Oh, I know. Everything's crystal clear. It's it is stunning just to hear people talk. I mean, it really is. And everybody's got their own view on what's going on, and I don't know if anybody can figure out what the hell's going on. But
how can I disappoint you guys today?
Yeah, how can that's basically what it is. And hey, John, real quick, I mean, I don't want to go into the full part of it, but in Chicago and to some people nationwide, this Jesse Smollett thing is sort of weird. Did you get a chance to look into any of this stuff?
I did. I read through the Supreme Court's decision. And it brings back, well, the best thing to read even before you read the Supreme Court's decision, Tom, is to get Dan Webb's statement that he issued in response to the decision, which is better reasoned than the decision itself. I think that when Justice Tuman recognized that, you know, the people were losing faith in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office for the way this thing was handled, he appointed the special prosecutor, Dan Webb, after Kim Fox had just made a holy mess of the whole thing. And I hate to say it, but I think the Supreme Court undid all of Tuman's best efforts here and has once again, you know, destroyed a lot of people's confidence in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. So
here's, I'm going to walk out on the plank on that one, this one. Would they have done this if Tuman was still alive?
That's a good question. I can't say for sure, but I would bet they wouldn't have, just because it would be a little too close to the bone to take on Tuman, who was a respected guy. And, you know, I think the Supreme Court is much less respectable from what I've seen lately. So I don't know if they would have had the nerve to do that. It's a lot easier to do it now that it's receding into the distant past for most people. It's going to be six years ago come February. So we're getting into ancient history.
In full disclosure, and Greg sometimes tells me I shouldn't do full disclosure, Mike Tuman was a pretty good friend of mine. My friend Bill Murphy's best friend. And Tuman was an interesting character. You know, he was booted out of New Trier. I don't know if you knew that or not.
He stole a car, didn't he? Or something?
He stole the security guy's car.
Oh, stole the police car.
The police car. So he gets booted out of New Trier, joins the Marines. And then, you know, he has a nice career with the Marines. I think the Marines got him an equivalent degree or something?
Yeah.
And then he came back and went to DePaul Law School. And was immediately recognized as like one of the best defense people and one of the defense prosecutors, and he becomes a judge up actually in Lake County, I believe. And then he went on to the appellate court, but he was one of these guys, these tough little Irish guys. He loved the law. All of a sudden, he thought that this was his life. And he, whenever there was a real big case, he's the one who put Jeff Fort in jail, right?
Yeah,
And whenever there was a big case, they would assign Tooman to it. And then he went to the appellate court. Then he left the appellate court to become head of the juvenile division here, which he was for a long time. And wherever there was a kind of a special need for somebody who was above reproach, they would call on Tooman. So even though he was the judicial guy, or, I mean, the juvenile guy, when this thing came down from Kim Fox, because didn't she had a prior relationship with the guy? Didn't somebody else? And wasn't Michelle Obama?
Oh, the whole mess.
Wasn't Valerie Jarrett and Michelle Obama? Everybody was involved.
Tina Chen, Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Doug
Abbott. Well, Kamala Harris was huge into it.
Yeah. In fact, I will go out on a limb and say I'd like somebody to answer for me the question whether Doug Emhoff was the entertainment lawyer handling Smollett's career and was hatching this whole thing. That would be something worth knowing if it happened.
Well, he was accused of getting himself arrested falsely, saying he was beat up or something by white people. Wasn't that the original deal?
Well, he impugned that they were white people, that whites were behind it, and that, you know, this is at 2 a.m. on one of the coldest nights of the year, and he was out to get food, and they put a noose around his neck and said, "This is MAGA country," and hit him, and he had a, you know, bruise to prove it, and then, you know, called the police, and the police came and did this extensive investigation, and the police then thought something was screwy about this. But then, you know, the whole thing blew apart a couple of days later when the Nigerian brothers, the Osundayo brothers, came forward and after intense questioning, broke down and said that he had engineered the whole thing.
Yeah, he paid them to basically attack him, right?
Yeah, there's film of them buying the red hats to make it look like MAGA hats. And that, you know, they were buddies of his from his health club. And the whole thing just completely imploded.
But he had police. He lied to the police and he had police looking for guys and all this stuff. So it was a... So then they were going to bring him up on charges of that, and then somehow Kim Fox dismissed the charges. But now that part I get, John. I mean, she did that. Now, so then
she'd also, you know, her own involvement in the case. She recognized that the connection she already had to the family made it look really bad.
Yeah.
She was just going to dismiss these outright. So she appointed her subordinate as an acting state's attorney, which she had absolutely no authority to do. There's no provision in the law for appointing an acting state's attorney. And that's this MAGA guy who then, you know, took over the case and made the deal that they weren't going to prosecute. But the whole thing was done with completely unconstitutional.
Okay, now, some of the people even on the show said that she had made a deal with him. Somebody had made a deal with him. And therefore it was double jeopardy. And that's essentially what...
That's not what it was.
No.
It was due process was violated.
Okay, all right. So anyway, Tooman appoints Dan Webb, and they say this was all messed up, and they should prosecute the guy or something along those lines. So then he goes, then he gets convicted. But now my question is, I doubt very seriously, maybe because he's my friend or was, that Tooman would be wrong. How does a state's attorney make a deal with somebody that if you don't run it by a judge, how is that the same as like pleading guilty to a lesser charge or anything? In other words, how can they make a deal? If evidence comes up later, they can't ignore that, can they?
No, and you know, this is when the Supreme Court's, you know, decision relied really solely on the one dissent in the appellate court's order, where the nolle prosequi order, which means declined to prosecute. And this does not bar a subsequent prosecution for the same charge. It just means that we're not, you know, prosecuting it at this time. And the fact that there had been a bond that was forfeited to the city of Chicago by Smollett, this was considered, well then this is consideration. He paid $10,000. We're bound by this nolle prosequi agreement now. We can't prosecute. And that just doesn't hold up under law.
So they took the bond as essentially a fine. It made it like it was a court case when it wasn't.
Right, and there was no finding of fact. There was no dismissal, you know, with or without prejudice to any of this.
If
there had been, then there would be double jeopardy.
So
there wasn't.
Where's the Supreme Court coming from?
His due process was violated rather than double jeopardy.
His due process.
Am I the only one that thinks this was a win?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that the law worked exactly the way it's supposed to. Even if it's going to be a terrible effect on the people, it should be dragged out long, and you should know that he's a...
Here's what I know, and I don't know that much. That's why I'm asking Jen. He's our attorney. Now, I know that if you go to court and you're found innocent, or you're found guilty with some sentence, you can't be... Double jeopardy means they can't try you again, right, Jen?
Right.
I don't see how some sort of a deal made with somebody... If he would have pleaded guilty and said the $10,000 is the fine and he ran it by a judge, I don't have any problem with it, Greg, but I don't see how a state's attorney can make, quote, a deal. They're not the judge. That's the part I have wrong. I can't.
Right. There was no finding of fact. There was no evidence. There was no discovery. There's no nothing.
I'm not sure that they wanted any evidence, discovery, or finding of fact. What happened before was what's in question.
Yeah, but Greg, if you get arrested for something, and the police go at it for a month and they go, we can't find enough evidence, and we don't charge you. And all of a sudden, some witness walks in 2 weeks later. They can charge you. They don't have the ability to say you're innocent. They just said they weren't going to charge you. But now all of a sudden they have more stuff. They can charge you, right, Jen?
Yeah, the same thing. I mean, if there's a jury tampering in a case, and there's the verdict is achieved because of arm twisting of the jurors by some thug associated with the defendant. Yes, you may get an acquittal, but if there's jury tampering, that's a separate charge that could open the whole thing up again. So if there's fraud involved, there's great latitude to fix what's been distorted.
Right, so...
To subvert the public's, expectations here.
Right, and what would be interesting is if they had said that there was the community service or the $10,000 bond wasn't enough, and then argued that way. But I don't know.
If she doesn't have any right to find the guy, she's the district attorney.
Right. It's clear, Tom, that it was from the get-go a Kim Fox humiliation as a total, overturning of what the state's attorney really is entrusted to do for the public, and it was to cover her own posterior, because she had fingers in this entire family's.
Was he? He wasn't a boyfriend, was he?
Oh no, he's gay, but
I try not to keep track.
First of all, there was all this. They wanted the case pulled out of the FBI's jurisdiction. Well, it was technically, there was a question of who should really be, investigating this and bringing charges. But she, subverted that to keep it within her own little tight control, because this is clearly what the family wanted, and she was doing the family's bidding. I mean, the whole thing just stunk from the get-go.
All right, well, we beat this one up. It's typical Chicago. Today's world in Chicago. As I age, I just get the idea that the rules... Get a load of this. I'm driving in the other morning. Actually, I was heading to Audrey's, and I see this young lady come up on one of those scooters. This is on North Avenue, right? We're actually on a Division, and she must be a biker as well, where you get to go through every stop sign, every red light. All of a sudden, I see her head out right through the red light, and I'm going, it's one of those motorized things, and I go, how does that, in her mind, if you start out as a biker, then you go to a scooter, then you go to a moped, you still get the same no rules? Does anybody think there's any rules that apply to them these days?
Well, bikers, a pedal-driven bicycle gets leeway, but I don't think a scooter...
I don't think a pedal-driven bicycle can go through a stop sign at all.
No, I think they can, Tom.
Ooh, I don't think so. Just because they do...
You wouldn't think so.
Well, certainly one with a motor does.
Never seen one pulled over, I know that.
No. Well, hell, that's a whole different program. All right, so, John, we've had you're a non-market kind of guy, and Greg is Greg was trading last night. Greg's a serious market kind of guy. We have people from Warren Buffett and people that have been around a while. They just keep talking about how overvalued the market is, and yet everybody's so bullish it's scary. You see, my view is if a non-stock Bitcoin can go to $100,000, why can't a real stock, I guess? I mean, when the rest of the world, people who just have the 401ks and so forth, and I talk to them all the time, what are you talking about? It's just going to keep going up. It's all we do. We got a new president. This guy's going to be good to business. It's going up even higher. I mean, the idea that the old guy was bad for business is kind of so screwed up I don't get, because I think the Obama-Biden group probably was better for big business than any Republican group's ever been, to the point where you wonder why people still think that the Republicans are better than the Democrats for big business. How could they be? It's hard to be any better. But is there some question someday when Walmart, instead of being, you know, 36 times earnings for a retailer, pretty freaking high. I mean, historically, don't sell Walmart on my, because it's up 46 cents. If you'd have sold it on Friday, you got more money today by not selling it. When does any of this stuff matter, if ever?
Well, it's always mattered, I think, Tom. And I hate to bring up, you know, the lead up to 1929 again, but, you know, the stock market was superheated then, and the average person was really struggling.
There's way more people in the market now than then. Then, you know, despite, again, this is another big lie. It wasn't a current big lie. All through my history, oh man, everybody was in the market. Everybody was in the market. And I'm looking at a book here right now, the 1929, the Great Crash. I think they said that at most 7% of the population had anything to do with the market. Most people didn't have a share. There were no 401ks, there were no IRAs, there was none of that stuff. So the only people, when you talk about the shoeshine boy, you know, saying the market was going up, I guarantee you he was a shoeshine boy at Grand Central Station. He wasn't the shoeshine boy in Chicago or Springfield, I don't think. Just saying. But now, I mean, it's an awful lot of people, you know, regular people, have big nest eggs because they have had 401ks or IRAs, or hell, we got a lot of people here that put money in IRAs and contribute to put money in IRAs, and they're just in a couple of ETFs, and they've been with PTI for 25 years. And guess what? They got a lot of dough in their account.
Or public pension funds or anything else, yeah.
Well, they managed to piss a lot of that away, public pension funds, but with fees and everything else, right? You can... I can give you a story about the police pension fund, but I won't.
There were always stakeholders in the market, Tom. I mean, there were employees who didn't have anything saved. They were living paycheck to paycheck, but their companies were, you know, in the market and, you know, were doing well in the market. But when those jobs vanished, those people had nothing left to stand on. There was always big investment in the market. It just wasn't like retail investors, you know, the average person.
Sure. I mean, the shares are always owned by somebody.
Right. But the effect, you know, if the thing ever, you know, cracks and falls apart, you know, it's just the disparity between the people who have done really well individually and are safe and don't have anything to worry about, as opposed to the people who are precariously positioned and don't have a lot of savings and aren't heavily invested in the market and lack the sophistication to do it, are just as liable to be screwed as they were back then. So,
well,
there's more of those people now than there were then.
There's some people. A few things have changed. This I don't know, Greg, what you think about this? Is constantly buying your stock back. Well, when I was at the University of Chicago, and we did a lot of work on compensation packages, which actually is really difficult to do. They actually put a compensation package together to make the chief executive act in the long-term best interests of the company. And if you get long-term enough, it usually means the employees, the community, and everybody, because you can't run a company for 50 years fighting with the city you're in, or you can't run a company for 50 years screwing your employees. So everybody sort of has to win together. And then try and actually put that down in a contract is way more difficult than anybody might think, because I tried to do it. I tell you what, you know what they used to do, John and Greg. They was about 25 people in his class, and the guy'd gather them up and he'd start read one off. think, and you would hope it wouldn't yours. And everybody going, nah, that one. Not. So, you know, you didn't even have to. You didn't even have to raise your hand. You just say, that's not going to work. Who's that? And he wrote that. You didn't want to. Literally, it was a real give and take. And but this whole idea of the stock options, where you don't pay any dividends. Now, you know, there's the reason for that is, or the alleged reason is, because of double taxation, which I would get rid of tomorrow. I don't know why Trump, you know, if he's going to be this much of a sage, why he doesn't do that, but he's not going to do that. We also are not going to raise the amount of capital gains you can take off your ordinary income if something comes down. It's still $3,000, which it was in 1981 when I started. So market's up like 100 times since then, but the number's still the same. Anyway, but if there's an awful lot of internal people, and this was never when I got in business, where stocks have flown up on hype and whatever else, they've essentially cashed out. And the shareholders have never gotten a dividend. I mean, look how many times Elon Musk has cashed out his Tesla stock to buy something else at pretty high prices, and they just keep giving him more stock options.
You remember what...
MSNBC coming next.
Yeah. You remember what... I think it was either Buffett or Munger said about compensation committees. They said something to effect, they're not looking for Dobermans, they're looking for Cocker Spaniels to pick, you know, what they get paid.
Well, I mean, when you're on a board, every time somebody gets a raise, a lot of the guys on the board are CEOs of other places. You essentially just gave yourself a raise.
Yeah, the principal agent problem.
Yeah, I mean, but what I'm saying is, there's going to be companies that someday fall to zero, and the shareholders are going to go, wait a minute, we never got a dividend, we never got a dime, and yet this guy sold out this stock, and he's a billionaire. What happened here? He's supposed to be looking out for us, and he's got all the dough, and he's gone. You know, that's a phenomenon that when I entered the business, you never saw, Jen. Never saw that.
No.
But, I mean, I wonder how the politics is going to work its way through. I mean, I think there's a chance that, I can't wait to get rid of Janet Yellen. Hopefully this other guy will be better. My concern with I wish, you know, Trump would have had some of these people vetted first. He's basically saying, I'm not doing any vetting process, right? I don't know how you get away with that. I mean, there are some conventions that make sense. And even though you get there with the idea that none of these rules apply to me, I think they do, John. I actually think they do. Maybe it's my Catholic upbringing or what, but are they ever going to get vetted?
Well, I mean, Trump is vetting them in the sense that he, at least in the case of some of them, I would say all of them, he knows them. He's been, you know, around them. He's got some kind of you know, trust in them, and they have some kind of loyalty to him, which is frankly what you want if you're going to appoint somebody to a cabinet position. You don't want renegades all over the place. I don't know very much about Bessent, you know, the new.
I'm going to say he's probably fine, but isn't the reason why these appointments usually come slow? Doesn't the FBI at least do some kind of a check on everybody before you announce them?
I don't think the FBI does. I think they do.
I think they do. I think they do some kind of a 20-hour deal.
It's more like scandal mongering, Tom, where you got people, you know, claiming Tulsi Gabbard is a, you know, foreign operative, and she's been bought and paid for by that kind of stuff. Well, maybe that's what the FBI does best these days.
No, but drop the politics for a second, and drop your hate of the FBI because they went after Trump. I'm saying, I think what I've been reading all weekend is normally the person you're going to name, you run them by the FBI, and they at least, John, if you open up an account at PTI, we have to do a background check on you.
Well, you could do a credit check, certainly. I don't know about the FBI getting involved.
We have to check. Okay, you don't like, I'm saying, up until now, from what I read, this job is the FBI's. Now, if that's the case, I don't think you can take and just say, well, I don't like the FBI, I'm not going to do any of this stuff. I mean, we have to check you at Interpol in every place if you become a client here. We become the police, and you're not a cabinet member.
Well, yeah, and you could do better than going to the FBI, is my point.
Okay, but I'm saying, I asked you to leave your hatred of the FBI because they went after your buddy,
can't
Trump.
You
can't do it. I mean, but someplace, somewhere, we're going to have to trust our institutions again, or we're falling apart. Oh, the FBI,
it's advice and consent of the Senate, Tom. You know, this is This is really, it should be the only oversight, I would say, until you want to like make something that everybody adheres to and you add all sorts of ethical dimensions.
I'm not asking the FBI to give an opinion. I'm saying there is a process, which everybody does, where you put the resume together or something, traditionally appears to have been done by the FBI and been done before the people have named.
I'm saying this is like asking the Chicago Bar Association judges.
You can't leave. You can't leave the hatred to the side, can you?
No, I'm just saying. What authority do they have to say who's qualified to be a candidate?
What I said was they're not.
None.
They're not giving. In my opinion, from what I read, they're not giving an opinion. They just give the people in the Senate.
They should have no role at all. I'm sorry. No role.
Nobody should do a background check.
I'm not saying, but the FBI?
Oh, they are the leading law enforcement thing in this country. Because they went after your boy doesn't mean that that's not their job, for God's sake.
They have no authority, first of all, Tom, and they have no credibility in my book right now, so that counts them out
twice.
That's
your book. All right, who should do it? Nobody? Or Trump?
Senate does it, Tom.
No, they don't.
Advise and consent. They confirm these things.
I'm saying when they want somebody to do a background check. SEC wants us to do it. The FBI has traditionally done it. I'm saying if they're not going to do it, who's going to do it?
Well, we can do a lot better than the FBI.
All right, so what are you going to do? Disband them? You want to defund the police and the FBI now?
No, don't give them the authority to effectively veto or...
They had a veto. What I said was somebody has to put together a packet that says in 1974, John Flanagan graduated Notre Dame with honors, with this, with that, and give somebody a background check to be a cabinet level person. Somebody has to do it.
Well,
we're talking 15 people. Okay.
You've got to do better than the CIA. Any intelligence operation today, I wouldn't trust to do this kind of work.
Right, what can we trust them to do? Nothing?
Well, you don't need anybody certifying, first of all, before the
thing goes to the Senate. I didn't say certified. I said a background check. That big difference. We don't certify you when you become to be a client. We do a background check.
What weight do you give that, Tom? I mean, at what point does it become useful?
If I'm a senator, I don't know where this argument's going. If I'm a senator, and all of a sudden this guy Flanagan has been appointed from here. Geez, I just heard the name yesterday. Who the hell is he? I want a 20-page document saying what you've done in your life and how many times you've been arrested. Do you have any scandals? Have you ever been charged with going after a little girl? I want to know that.
I don't see any of that stuff reflected in the appointment process so far. I mean, if the Biden administration had Googled some of the names of their own judicial appointees, none of them would have ever made it to the hearings. But they didn't even do that.
What I said is, traditionally, and we're going to dash here in a second, but... Traditionally, FBI has put together this vetting process. You have a vetting process for you to go visit the White House, for God's sake. Right?
I thought they had people go through the White House all the time.
That's a difference. If you're going to go as a visitor when the president's there, you're going to be to go to a meeting with him or something, you're vetted. I'm not talking about the girls from fourth grade.
That in the end, the senator has staff, right? So I'm sure at any point in time, those people can go on and do whatever they want.
I know in dealing with the right wingers, this is very difficult. Simple fact is, this has been the FBI's job, okay? And the Senate gets essentially a dossier on all these people. They don't say pull the guy. They don't say whatever. Now, in the words of the right wingers, now. Being Trump's friend is good enough. I think that whatever the process is.
Right. So why would that change just because Trump's trying to appoint him? They still have to all be approved.
Approved is not. What I'm saying is everybody used to have a vetting process, all right? And now they don't. Or at least they haven't yet.
Kevin just texted, there are thousands of law firms and private investigators that do background checks. And I would say, absolutely. And credit agencies and everything else that people can rely on.
You and Kevin don't like the FBI. They still have a job to do. You don't like the police. Yet the minute somebody mugs you, you're going to dial 911.
These jobs have nothing to do with criminal investigations where you're looking at somebody as able to be appointed and confirmed to a cabinet position. I'm sorry, the FBI has nothing to do with that.
All you got to do is be the president's friend.
No,
listen, I'm not saying that at all.
But the Senate is where you have an adversarial relationship where you got people who don't want this person, you have people who do want them, and let the evidence come out.
When I say vetted, not
the FBI.
I mean,
the FBI can have all sorts of briefs if they want to, you know, submit them and come in and testify if they don't like this person. Although, given the way the FBI
I don't think that's what they did. I think when I say the vetting process, where you went to school, where you worked, have you been charged? Those kinds of things. That's the FBI's job. The fact that even Kevin doesn't like him doesn't make it's not their job. That's what I consider to be the vet. I'm not asking the FBI for their opinion on your choice. I agree with you there.
Once you give them that kind of authority,
authority
to weigh in on it.
I didn't say weigh in on it. I said a vetting thing. This is the Interpol report on John Flanagan.
Vetting involves omitting and focusing, both, you know, and what the FBI as a completely politicized entity.
Every single person in the FBI is politicized. Now, because they went after Trump, everyone should be fired in the FBI. Nobody should be trusted. They should just be gone tomorrow. Where are you going with this?
Well, there have been legitimate, you know, calls for it to be completely reformed because it's completely humiliating.
I'm not saying, as has the
intelligence operation.
Are they still free to charge Democrats or no?
Well, if they supposedly they're
they can take a charge Democrats, they can't charge Republicans. What are we doing here? If I would hope that if it was me elected, I would try and make the FBI as good as they can be.
The FBI bring charges against anybody they want, Tom. I don't want them involved in the vetting process for cabinet positions.
Well, why don't
if
we
got something on somebody? They should.
I think we should get one of Trump's other buddies. We're not going to trust the FBI to do a background check on somebody.
No, we trust them to bring charges when there's breach of, you know, the federal criminal code. Period. And if they can't do that and they don't have anything pending, then get the hell out of the way.
They're not in the way. They've been doing this for 100 years.
In the way. You're saying to vet them to do what exactly?
To put the resume together for everybody, so the Senate can look at it and have a dossier.
No, Tom. No, that's like a criminal investigation organization making an opinion.
All right. So who's going to do it, Giuliani?
Call it that, but that's what it is.
We're changing subjects here. You're way off base here. I'm just.
So be it.
I mean. Let's
go. How does hell to be there?
Let's you know what? Let's get Giuliani to do it. He's legit. Anyway, SP Futures up 29.
Let's get the Cook County State's Attorney's Office to be it,
Oh my God!
I didn't say we shouldn't fix some of these things. Hey, question.
We elected senators to do this. Is my point, and they've got staff. They've got access to information that the average person does not. This is who the Constitution gives the right to approve or disprove somebody for that position. Let it go there.
We can't trust the Chicago police to say if John's ever had a speeding ticket.
Well, what are you looking to obtain that information for, Tom? I mean, if I'm appointed to some position and, you know, I get have to be confirmed by the city council in Chicago and it comes out that I've got traffic tickets or haven't paid them, that's, of course, legitimate. But it isn't like, you know, you have to submit it to these people and they come up with a list of their objections to this person.
I didn't say objections. I said there should be a list of things you look at. You look at who the companies they've been with, have the companies ever been charged.
Well, you go to the FBI and ask them, do you have anything on this person we should know about? You go to the police department, do you have a criminal record?
Whatever. No matter the
list of the employees.
Let's just say in your mind Trump's buddy's good enough. But let's change topics. What if somebody wanted to buy a building in downtown Chicago right now, how would you value it? Nancy?
Comparable.
Well, none of them are selling except for like zero.
Right. Well, that's the market we're in, yeah.
Nance, what would you be your future? Would you have any? Would you? What would be your idea of the future of downtown Chicago? So right now, Michigan Avenue is probably one spot, but what about like where we are? The South Loop with the exchanges gone and stuff. The buildings are half full. You know, some people have a restaurant or bar in them that might do okay, but how would you even put a number on something like that?
Well, you'd have to look at, within a certain radius in a certain time period and say this is the number of properties that have sold, this is, the high-low, of these prices, what's the average, what's the current situation as far as their occupancy. There's all sorts of things that you could decide whether this building is valuable or, more valuable than the average or less valuable. But it's a constantly changing and unfortunately a constantly declining number lately. So, you can come up with a number. The trouble is when you have distressed properties like foreclosures, that drags everybody's value down.
John, that is how they do it.
That's the bag we're in now. So,
well, how would you estimate your taxes going forward?
Has nothing to do with the value of the building. The assessor's office rates how much the building is for or worth or whatever, and that's the value on it. It wouldn't matter if 52 appraisers came in with a dollar. If the assessor's office says it's worth $1 million, they have to pay tax on the million.
Well, I guess what I'm asking, Nancy, if a building had a $250,000 tax bill, which some of them did before COVID, and now it's the revenue's 40% of what it was, or 50, can you figure that tax is going to be 125 going forward, or 250, or more? I mean, it's a big number. Nope. When you're trying to figure out how much to pay for the place.
When you talk about something like this, it's all up to the Cook County assessor, and you have no say. I mean, it wouldn't matter if the building is at zero. And that's what causes some of these foreclosures that we're seeing. They look at it and say, I don't have this kind of revenue. And the revenue I do have doesn't even equal my tax bill. And people walk away. Because you can't get the assessor to change the number.
Okay. Well, then nobody...
So, it doesn't... It's tough because you have an entity, and for whatever reason, they do, good things and bad things, and that's what makes a person form their judgment on whether or not this is good or bad. But,
Well, do you have any idea how much... Either of you have any ideas how much these tax bills have come down as people can't pay them, or are they're probably slower?
They don't come down. That's the whole problem. They don't come down. And now he's talking about putting more tax burden on the whole Cook County system. And it's getting to the point where it doesn't have anything really to do with the valuation of the building. It has to do with they need the revenue, and they're just going to force it upon everyone else to pay it.
Well, one of the buildings...
They're going to change the formula higher, so it doesn't really matter.
One of the buildings I'm sort of familiar with, I think the taxes went up from 100 grand, I'm going to say, before COVID, say 12 years ago, to about 250 right when COVID started. So maybe... 8 years before COVID to COVID. Well, now there's no way to place 250 now. So do they just keep sending the bill and it gets it appealed, there's no way to place is writing the check for 250. What exactly is happening? I guess is what I would like to know. I mean, what does happen? 440, which is now 425. I gotta believe that their tax bill was... I can't even imagine what it was. I mean, that place is, what was it, 40 stories, John, or something, or 39?
Yeah.
I mean, and it was damn near full. They got to be, maybe they're doing a little better than a lot of the other places around here. Maybe they're 60% full or 65, but there's no way they're writing that check. I mean, I guess you could send people a bill for whatever you want, but how does the process even work, I guess? Do you have to pay it before it goes to appeal, or can you appeal it?
Yes, you have to pay it. Period.
But if you don't have the money, how do you pay it? I guess my question.
I mean, you can file a certificate of error if there's been, a mistake made. You know, if the assessment is for a different property, or there's the building's been demolished or damaged and can't be rented or lived in, and therefore the current assessment, which treats it as if it is habitable or rentable, is wrong, and then that is a separate appeal process, and it's adjudicated through the Board of Review and the assessor's office. The thing that concerns me, and I don't know what your experience in this is, Nancy, if the bills now, when they do a reassessment in the Cook County office, the assessor's office, it looks like they've been kind of bought the whole idea of DEI and done this now with the idea of coming up with a market value for property, and it's on your tax bill and reassessment notice that this is your market value, and here's what the multiplier is, and here's what the assessed valuation is. It's a percentage of that market value, blah blah blah. But they're acting as an appraiser of the property based on what, I don't know, but this is causing huge jumps in people's tax bills and reassessment, because all of a sudden the assessor seems to think, well, your property increased 30 or 40% from last year. It may still not be close to what the market value is, either too high or too low, but it isn't like anybody's property in Chicago, like a residential property, has gone up 30 or 40% in a year. So they're in this game now that I think is very dangerous. It's going to freak people out, and it's going to make them think there's no point in staying in this kind of an operation at all. Like, I got to get out. I think they thought they were going to help distribute the unfairness in the system, and I think it's just having the opposite effect. It's spotting the people who have properties in more agreeable or safe neighborhoods and sticking it to them. So
is the tax bill in a commercial building? Is it revenue based, or do they just say, hey, it's 40 stories, it's this amount of square feet, and here's the number? Or is it revenue based?
Go ahead, Nat. Say it.
As far as I know, Tom, that as far as I know, every 3 years they assess a section. You agree with that, John?
Yeah, the townships.
Township. Yeah. So they don't, Tom, they you're stuck with that bill for 3 years. I mean, you can individually, he's like John said, you can appeal it. There's three stages. I have been through this, so I pretty much understand the process. But if they say no, you're stuck with the bill. Period.
Well, and I guess what I'm fishing for is what are the
you're asking if they care about whether or not the building is rented or not rented, how much income it has. The answer is no.
I thought that there was a split between how residential, which is I think what you're more focused in, Nance, and commercial. I thought the commercial had to do with more with the revenue the building was generating than the actual.
I do not believe that's true. Do you, John?
Well, I think you can with an appeal.
I think you can do an appeal on it, but not they don't care otherwise.
If say the building has had a fire damage or has been partially condemned or something, so this is how Pritzker got around it with his townhouse on Astor Street, that it was inhabitable because he wrecked all the toilets. I mean, but some of this happens not deliberately, but just through neglect or bad management or you name it, but you'll have to have evidence to come in to have the assessment reduced, and it isn't going to happen immediately. You may pay the bill under protest, and then you'll get a refund, or you can apply it to the next year's tax bill if it comes out in your favor. But it's a long and tortured process, and attorneys' fees rack up pretty fast on it. So a lot of people are just despondent. They don't see any way out of it, and they walk away. The kind of an old story in Chicago, where people just leaving properties to wither away and fall down of their own accord. And the city is littered with that.
I believe that the city is going to have to the city is going to have to court the businesses, and this is in a commercial building, to come back and have their employees come back. And I cannot tell you the number of employees who are saying, well, I kind of like my job working from home, and I really don't want to go back.
Well, especially like the guys who are supposed to be working construction that are home. That's hard to do from home,
I Well, construction workers don't have anything to do with the buildings downtown anyways,
right,
because...
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, okay. But they don't want to come back.
Well, of course they don't. It's work.
The younger people really don't want to come back. And I know a few people where they've been, you know, offered a promotion. And they have to... But they would have to go into work 5 days a week. And they're actually turning it around, saying their work-life balance, they prefer... just staying doing what they want. Now, years ago, back in the day when we were younger, if you didn't take the promotion, boy, you were dead meat. You might as well just leave that job.
I've been sort of predicting from the beginning, but two things I think have happened. One, and I'm not just going to bash one side or the other. I think if somebody's been working at home because of the COVID or whatever, and all of a sudden you bring them back to work, it better come with a raise, because the parking, the cars, everything else, if you have to go out and buy the second car to be able to come back to work, to think that it's the same price as it was 4 years ago, that's a little naive. So, but the idea that you actually have to go to work and it's an imposition on you, hey, get over it. Going to work is going to work, right? That's why they call it work.
So I'm just saying this is the problem I see that they're facing, we're facing more than anything else. And the other thing is they have to control. People have to want to go back to into downtown, and with the crime and all that, I don't know. I don't know if people really feel safe right now, well, downtown.
You know what? People get off the train, they walk a block to their place, they work, and they turn around. It's Chicago has a crime problem. I agree with you, but we get into this forever. But I think a lot of people, everybody I know, that was working from home had a side hustle. I mean, who knows if they were at their machine? I mean, some places actually you can tell if you're going to be on the phone all day long, in like 8 hours, they're going to track you all day. I guess you can do that from home, right? What's the difference?
Yeah, they do. They do, yeah. Do that, and I mean that's very common, a very common practice. They can tell. If you're on the computer and you just can't have it on and walk away, I mean, your fingers have to be on those keyboards.
But I guess I'm an old fart, but you can't tell me that you're getting the best out of your workers or your people when there are people that have never met their boss.
I think the advantage to having everyone come to work is the hallway conversations.
Yeah.
Myself, where, you know, I mean... That has always been some of the best ideas have come out of, like, when you're walking by and you say, hey, I've been meaning to get a hold of you. What do you think of this? And the person says, oh, my God, it's a whole, you know. Those usually are the most spontaneous, accidental, but a lot comes out of it, especially when, you know, it's cross-department or something like that. So I do think going to work, I do believe in going to work, but you have created an environment now where people have, you know, started work from home, and then it gets them to another place and another balance. So I don't know what the answer is. I just know that is one of the reasons some of the buildings are empty.
Well, I think you're right, but you know, we could go on this one like forever, but
forever, yeah.
I mean, the idea that somebody who has to make, you know, 50 client calls and does that on a Friday and doesn't come in and does them from home, I got no issue with that. I mean, come on. I mean, you don't need to come into work and sit on a phone when you can do it at home. But when you look at the people out in Silicon Valley, weren't they the group that said, we want everybody talking to everybody? Didn't they wouldn't even let you have cubicles, Jen? Because they wanted you to be able to talk to the person next to you?
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine me the same firm saying, everybody just work from home. If you're absolutely convinced that that's how you advanced, is the camaraderie and the idea sharing, how do you do both?
But it's something I've seen in my own family, and I wonder if you've noticed this with your clients too, Nancy. Is one of the great attractions to working at home, especially if you're a mother, if you have small children, and you can somehow balance your life to get the older kids off to school in the morning, sit down at your computer, get on the phone or whatever, and also have one eye cocked on your, you know, 3-year-old who's, you know, paddling around the room, and the other one on your work duties. You're saving on childcare their expenses. And if you're told now you have to go back to be in the office, now you're looking at not only a loss of your time at home, but a greater expense of having to pay somebody to look after your children while you're not there. So if you did have a side hustle, and I agree with you, Tom, a lot of people were able to do that. They have to give that up too. So you're seeing a huge cut to their, cash flow by going back to work. It isn't just that they're lazy and they prefer to sell a bonbon.
Well, I mean,
but it's a struggle now that they can't afford to work under these terms. And does this come up with when you review people's financials, Nancy, and what they're paying in daycare or whatever?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We're not, I only get to look at what their installment payments are, the credit card payments, things like that. No. Mm-mm. That's why they're.
Did you even ask about it or anything?
No, not at all.
Wow.
Well, Lance, what are you seeing in your biz? Is business picking up? Every week they talk about the rates have gone up a bit or down a bit, and it seems like the total mortgage applications are, one week they go up, next week they go down a little bit. They're maybe creeping up a little bit. But what are you seeing? I mean, I'd say a few more houses are available. She's got she's busier than she normally is in December, at least for the last few years. Instead of two houses being available, she says there's like 20. It's not like it's 100, but are you seeing a little move in the business, or the interest rates have been steady for a while?
We have seen a move, and obviously it's better for me if more people are buying and selling, and the rates are low, and then you can refinance people and help them out of their credit card debt or whatever debt they've gotten into. Okay. And it's just that part of the business is gone now. So you're just looking, mainly what it is people who are buying and selling. Okay. And with the rates being, creeping back towards 7, people who are still at 3%, if they can stay, they stay. Why wouldn't they? You know what I mean? There's so many other things that have gone up that are absorbing their discretionary spending that for them, it's better just to stay. Now, for them, it's great, right? Because they're comfortable. For someone like me, it's not as good as what I'd like. But I understand there's a balance to this, and everybody has to do what's best for them. We are seeing some things come up. Like a lot of the people that I have referred to Audrey, they have actually had to sell for family reasons. Like we had one that her husband was dying and was in skilled care, so that's very expensive. We've had another one where the people physically can't do stairs anymore, so they've got to go. And there's a lot of situations like that going on where people are obviously some of these clients were older and they have to do what they have to do. But as far as the goodness of what's going on out here, if the rates if the rates are creeping towards 7 and people are used to them being at 3 or 4, that's tough for them. But I don't ever see I've heard 100,000 times since that Trump got in, he's going to lower these rates, but lower them to what? I mean, 7 back in our day, everybody would have just got up and done a dance.
If you're a Trump fan,
John would have came out and done a dance.
If you're a Trump fan, everything you want to have happen in the world, he's going to do. He's the Lone Ranger. He's Solomon. He's all combined together. But
it doesn't even matter, Tom.
I know.
What is he going to lower them to? He can't bring them back down to 3.
Well, you popped into my mind incredibly the other day, Nance, because last week when you were on, you mentioned that there was some rate on some.
Was I awake when I popped in?
Yeah, it was about you talking about a rate on a card or if somebody bought.
Oh, the 35%.
35%. Well, did you see the special the other day? Actually, someone it wasn't a special on CNBC. They're saying. They think within months, the department store cards are going to pass through 40. So my question to you is, if somebody gets caught up in that whirlwind, I'm not so sure that you're not going to be refinancing houses just at the current rate to get more on the mortgage.
Well, Tim, I think there's a lot of those people out there. I mean, the credit card debt is the highest it's been in forever. I understand it, but that is still an unsecured debt. So these people still have choices.
Well, I guess my question is, somebody owns a house that you know, whatever, they got a mortgage. They bought the house at 300. They got a 7% mortgage, and they've been paying it, never missed a payment. All of a sudden, the house is, quote, worth $400,000, and they can assess for that, and they've got $30,000 on some card that's hitting them up for 30-some percent. Are you getting somebody coming in and saying, let's just do another mortgage for $30,000 more, and I'll rip up the credit card? Are you getting anything like that, or do you anticipate that?
Not yet. I mean, you got a lot of it when it was at 3%, believe me. You got a lot of it. I just had someone last week where they came in with over $100,000 in credit card debt. And
What rates are they paying?
I didn't even ask Tom, because it doesn't make any difference. When you have that much in credit card debt.
Well, it sounds like if you can get another 100 grand on the mortgage, it's a job for Nancy.
I understand. That's why they came to see me. And honestly and truthfully, I told them they should talk to an attorney and maybe just file for bankruptcy. Or have really, they should just file for bankruptcy, because.
You sent them to Jen?
Jen, is that what you do?
No. But I remember in law school, the only the problem with bankruptcy is people wait too long to do it.
Well, it honest to God, I mean, at 100, if you looked at, I looked at their entire financial situation, and obviously another originator would have just, you know, gobbled this up and done it, right? But the increase to their mortgage, and then then they're going to struggle to pay that. It's not really in their best interest. It's really not. I didn't say they should do bankruptcy. I said you should talk to a lawyer about doing bankruptcy. You should talk to a lawyer about trying to sell, kind of these how you got into this mess. See if there's any, if this has any value to it that you, for what you purchased, and see if you can sell it. I mean, I would do much more, feel better if they did that.
What makes you make you think it wasn't for like medical or something?
It wasn't medical.
Okay.
It was not medical. It was, you know, they just didn't understand what they were signing up for.
What would if you had to guess, let's say if the number they owed was 100, how much of the 100 was the actual stuff they bought and how much was interest that piled on over time?
Oh, no. No, it's all what they bought.
I hope they
have been paying it off. But they're draining their resources too, and it's not good for them. And now they have such, you know, they've pretty much exhausted their resources, and to put that extra burden now on the payment for their house with what their income is, it's not, they can't do it. I mean, it's not going to work. So then, I mean, could I do what they asked me to do? Yes. But long term, it's not in their best interest. They're just going to wind up kicking the kid down the road for another 5 or 6 years. They'll be safe, and then they're going to be facing this again. So rather than do that, why not just face it now?
John, I bet they had some nicer stuff than you and me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
you know, that's the problem. When you ask people, what do you really have to show for this? It's sad because they really can't name it.
No.
You can't even really say, can't like, a. You should be able to say, like, a bass boat or something.
Yeah, so it's sad. It's very sad. And the rate of the mortgages compared to when we were younger, this is 7 would be great, but it's not great in this circumstance. And eventually, it's going to have to open up, but one would think. But I think people are just making do with what they have.
Well, 7's okay when the house is 150. It's not so hot when it's 405.
Yeah.
Big difference. Yeah. I totally agree. The cost of homes right now is even higher than I could have even dreamt.
Well, when are we going to get together so I can argue with John in person?
Oh, I don't. I, you know, I'm beginning to see why John doesn't come out, Tom.
Why?
Well, I mean, you're arguing over something that is just, it's just, it, it's not worth it. I mean, he's saying the FBI shouldn't do the vetting, and you're saying, well, people should be vetted. I'm sure they are vetted somewhere in this process by
what senators. I said was traditionally they have done the vetting before the person was named, and now they're not.
But
that's
I think I said.
John,
I think John would disagree with that statement. I would think that John is saying in his responses that the FBI never did the vetting. That's not their job.
Why have I read four articles this weekend?
I would not want them in a position where they could recommend or.
I didn't make this up. I said it always was their job.
John, do you agree with that statement?
No, I don't.
That's where the disagreement comes in first. So, what's the sense of why would I have brought it up
if I didn't read that it was always their job? I just pull it out of the air.
Well, I don't know, Tom. I'd like to see what you read.
The announcements for cabinet appointees has been done in record time by Trump. And I don't have a problem with that. I honestly don't. I mean, I'm hoping he's been thinking about it for 4 years. And what I read and I heard was the reason why you don't do it that fast is usually even you don't know the person that much. You want somebody to do somewhat of a background check to make sure that the person you're putting in there is not somebody you didn't. I don't know anybody's whole life. And traditionally, that job has been the FBI. And my feeling is, it's nothing more than a background check, but done by somebody. I'm not hoping the FBI is going to give me my opinion. I don't want that. I just want, what's the background? Is John Flanagan? I knew him then. I know him now. In the middle, what the hell did he do? It's just a way of covering your own ass basically before you put somebody out there and find out they're an axe murderer. I'm saying is. And according to what I read and heard, Trump has not done that process. Okay, that's all I said. It's a change.
But really, seriously, all these people he's got lined up, whether you're a Trump supporter or not, I doubt all of them are going to make it through.
Okay, but all I said was this was what other people have done all the time, and now it's not being done. I didn't even have an opinion on it, to be honest with you. I'm just saying it's a change.
But here's the problem. We don't know if the other administrations did it either.
From what I read, it's been fairly traditional for the last however many administrations.
But where did you read it from, on the Internet? Because we know what the Internet says is always true.
I'll research it some more. I'll research it some more. All right.
Yeah, then John and I will privately meet with you, and I'll bring the boxing gloves.
Right. Yes. S&P. Yeah. We'll see if we get John's wallet out of his pocket. That'll be a hook. S&P futures up 40.
No, let's invite the FBI to the meeting. They can pay.
John will be like, "Oh, oops! I think I must have lost my wallet in Uber." Yeah. Nasdaq futures up 152. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.